Lovely by Martha.
You know, Sandberg,
Simon said as he answered the phone,
I suppose it's just as well I don't have custody of Daryl until New Year's Eve this year.
Simon?
I haven't heard anything new on Jim yet. I'm sorry. I promise I'll call as soon as I know anything.
Simon, that's what I'm trying to tell you. Jim's here. He's here at the loft right now.
He's what?
Blair explained what he could while Simon sputtered disbelievingly. But evidently, top secret military project actually carried some weight with Simon Banks. At any rate, he calmed down when Blair presented it as an explanation and promised to have a locksmith at the loft as soon as he could round one up. Meanwhile, Daniel's head was down, his lips pressed in a stubborn line that Blair was already too familiar with. And Jim was looking across the room at him with concern. He hoped O'Neill had shut up about the intergalactic revenuers because, frankly, Jim had enough to worry about right now. Sam was standing by the windows talking on her cell phone, and Blair found himself hoping that Jim was too tired to focus on that conversation, too. It's going to be all right, he said firmly as he put the phone down. Simon will have someone here ASAP. Jim, you want some coffee? Might help you warm up. Ordinary and normal was the way to go. Jim was here and safe, when not 15 minutes ago Blair had been afraid he would never see him again. Nothing else, no matter how bizarre, could possibly matter half so much. Look at you, O'Neill was saying to Daniel, sounding more weary than angry now. You'd rather endanger civilians than ask us. Then ask me for help? What the hell were you thinking? Did you even think at all? Not now, Jack. Daniel sounded tired, too, and he wouldn't raise his eyes to look at O'Neill.
This is the man you've been running from the past 6 months, Jim said.
Running? O'Neill said. From me? Is that what you've been telling people? For Christ's sakes, Daniel, are you deliberately trying to give Mackenzie a reason?
Sir.
Sam had put her hand over the receiver of her phone and was staring at him with shocked eyes from across the room. That why you came after me? Just to cart me back to a padded cell?
God damn it, Daniel, O'Neill snapped. How the hell can you say crap like that to me? I'm not sure I even know who you are anymore.
I believe hot coffee would be most welcome,
Tilk announced.
Do you require assistance, Mr. Sandberg?
No, I've got it. Thanks.
You never did know who I was, Jack. Daniel stared determinedly at the floor. But it's not your fault. I didn't either.
Now see, I knew it. That's not you. That's Shifu messing with your head until you don't know which end is up. Something happened to you on P4X-347. While the rest of us were relaxing by the seashore, you met those freaky guys, or somehow you figured out how they do what they do, and whatever Shifu showed you in that dream had you so paranoid and confused, you decided you couldn't even tell us about it.
Daniel, can't you see how crazy that is?
Sir, Carter interrupted. She'd put her phone away.
Sir, maybe this isn't the place?
Oh, I think it's a dandy place. Not like security is exactly an issue anymore, is it?
Blair, Detective Ellison, You've both noticed that Daniel has a real knack for teleportation these days. Am I right?
There's nothing to talk about, Daniel muttered. I'd already seen what could happen. I couldn't take the risk.
But you did, Jim said unexpectedly. To save my life, you did it anyway.
They were hurting you.
Daniel sounded absolutely miserable. I couldn't just... He looked away, his good hand nodding on his knee, just as Sam's phone rang. She stepped away to answer it, but turned back almost at once.
That's funny.
O'Neill's head jerked up.
What's funny?
General Hammond was going to have the CO at Fairchild give me a call about getting SF down here. I thought that's who it was, but there's no one on the line.
Wrong number?
I don't know, sir. There's a funny kind of buzzing. Now it's gone. I'm not even getting a dial tone.
Crap, O'Neill said flatly.
You don't think...
We're not waiting around to find out. Let's move, people. We're getting Daniel and Detective Ellison out of here right now.
But it was already too late. This time they used the front door. They even knocked, a dreadful hollow rattling that boomed through the loft like thunder, though they didn't wait for anyone to answer. They let themselves in, stepping through the door a half second before it actually opened. The walls snapped and waved like flags in a violent wind. But the intruders themselves were as poised and well-dressed as before. And this time they didn't screw around. Jack and Tilk were felled by blasts from their S-shaped weapons before they were fully in the room. Sam, a moment later. Blair held up his hands and said, "Please," hoping to distract them from Jim. The nearest intruder, resplendent in a Brooks Brothers suit that somehow seemed to accommodate an indeterminate number of arms, leveled his weapon and fired at him without a word. Blair felt an instant of warmth, and then every ganglia in his outraged nervous system began to shriek in protest.
Oh, dear God, don't shoot Jim, he thought.
He felt as though he were burning up from the inside out. He didn't know if he was still standing or, more likely, collapsed in a twitching heap on the floor. He was sure he was still alive only because death couldn't possibly hurt this much. Please, he wanted to beg, and couldn't unlock his jaw enough even to moan. Please, don't do this to Jim.
Zatted twice in one day. Okay, there was no doubt anymore. As of right now, this was officially a top 10 contender for Jack's worst Christmas ever.
Through the roaring of blood in his ears, he could hear an inhuman screaming and knew the unimaginative bastards had extracted Junior again. Lousy Christmas for Tilk, too. Jack managed to slit his eyes open, not moving any other part of his body to betray the fact that he was conscious again. He couldn't see much. A stretch of extremely clean wooden floor giving way to an equally clean area rug. The legs of furniture. The back of Tilk's head. Junior was still screaming, so the Sandberg kid must not have been spared this time. Or, at any rate, wasn't in any condition to be returning symbiotes to their Jaffa hosts.
Damn.
Moving with excruciating slowness, Jack rolled his head to the side, trying to recon without giving himself away. Everything hurt, and his nerve endings were still jangling like sleigh bells. Carter was sprawled on the floor in front of the windows, and the sofa near the fireplace where Jim and Daniel had been sitting was empty, save for a puddle of blankets.
Blast and damn!
He pushed himself up on his hands and knees, blinking away the dark spots obscuring his vision. First things first, needed to get Junior back to Teal'c. He followed the gasping, outraged shrieks and found the parasite flopping on the floor in front of the TV set. You know, when you saw them like this, helpless as a landed trout, it was easier to understand why the entire species had such a fatal tendency to overcompensate. He grabbed it around the neck, twitching in distaste, and crawled back to Teal'c. He was conscious, but his face was gray with pain, his breathing uneven. It occurred to Jack to be very relieved that the interlopers hadn't casually snapped the symbiote's neck after pulling it from Teal'c's body.
"Got the little guy back for you," he muttered,
and when Teal'c nodded in relief, Jack let it go. He didn't watch, though he couldn't blot out the squelching sound of the symbiote re-entering Teal'c's pouch.
"Where is Daniel Jackson?"
Teal'c groaned when he could speak. Jack shook his head.
"That's next on the agenda. You all right?"
"I will be."
"Good man."
Jack patted him on the shoulder and then staggered to his feet. That was when he finally saw Detective Ellison on the far side of the kitchen island, hunched awkwardly on his knees over Blair's prone form. Daniel's manacles were hanging empty from the chain around the detective's waist.
"Oh, God."
He made his way clumsily to Ellison's side, legs wobbling, head pounding.
"Christ, he was getting too old for this.
A couple of Zat blasts and he was falling to pieces here." "Ellison," he said, and repeated himself when the detective didn't respond. He wondered if the man was in shock.
"Detective Ellison."
Blair moaned and tried to raise himself.
"Jim?"
"Don't try to move yet."
"Yeah."
Blair closed his eyes for a moment, but they flew open again.
"Jim, are you all right? Help me sit up."
Ellison's shackled hands made it awkward. Jack knelt beside them, feeling lightheaded himself, and helped Blair turn around and sit up against the kitchen island.
Oh man, that sucks.
Blair clutched at his forehead. If he was fighting the same headache as Jack, Jack didn't blame him.
"Jim," he said again, "did they shoot you?"
"No," Ellison said. "Sandberg, are you..." He spread his hands over Blair's chest.
"I can still feel it. What the hell kind of a weapon..."
Sandberg caught his hands.
"I'm okay. I am okay, right?"
he repeated a little uncertainly, looking to Jack.
"It's temporary, pretty much. You're okay. Detective Ellison, what happened to Daniel?"
Ellison looked at him. "They took him. I'm sorry, Colonel."
"How?"
Jack picked up a handful of the locked manacles, as though evidence of its impossibility would somehow make Ellison tell a more acceptable story. Ellison bowed his head a little. Jack noticed that Sandberg was still holding his hands. "They just walked up to us. We couldn't defend ourselves. One of them held out Daniel's broken glasses and told him..."
Ellison took a hitching breath.
"One of those things told Daniel that he couldn't write off the depreciation on his home computer as a business expense."
Then they grabbed him and just yanked him through. I don't understand. Jack looked across the room, hoping somehow that Sam would be able to make sense of this. Of course she couldn't, though. She was just now beginning to recover, pushing herself up, shaking her head in groggy pain. "Do you know where Daniel is now?" he asked Ellison helplessly, knowing that if he did, he would have already told Jack. "No." Ellison gazed straight ahead, his face white, blue eyes steely. "When they touched Daniel, he... they weren't human, Colonel. They weren't anything." The muscles in Ellison's jaw balled up. "Sandberg," he continued very quietly, as though no one else could possibly believe him. "They made him like they were, and I couldn't see him anymore. I couldn't even look." "It's okay, man," Sandberg said, rubbing Ellison's hands between his own. "It's okay. This is way beyond anything any sane person is supposed to be able to deal with." It was not okay. In fact, it was so far past okay, Jack didn't even know where to begin. "Didn't you see anything that might help?" he demanded in frustration. Sandberg shot him a furious glance, but Ellison closed his eyes, face tense with concentration. Behind him, Jack could hear Sam talking softly to Teal'c.
"Jackson took me someplace," Ellison said haltingly, eyes still closed. "To get away from the NID, he took me somewhere and told me it was a beautiful city beside the sea. It wasn't. It wasn't any place sane or real. It was like nothing at all, and what Daniel thought was the sound of waves crashing was really the sound of that nothingness getting bigger and bigger." Ellison took a sudden, deep, gasping breath, like a man awakening himself from a nightmare. His eyes flew open and he began to cough violently. "Oh, God," Sandberg muttered to himself, but his actions were calm and deliberate, shifting around so that he could support Ellison as he coughed, one hand on his back, moving in a circle, his other arm around Ellison's waist, finally curling close enough to lay the side of his head on the back of Ellison's shoulder. His mouth moved, whispering quiet reassurances. After a few endless moments while Jack watched with clenched fists, helplessly imagining Daniel having been torn into his component atoms, because how else could they have gotten him out through those chains? Ellison grew calmer. He weakly tried to shrug himself free of Sandberg's hold, and the kid let him go carefully, watching with concerned eyes. At the moment, he probably didn't even remember Jack and the rest of them were still there. Ellison did, though. He lifted his head and looked at Jack. "I can still feel them," he whispered. "Like a sludgy black oil leak. This ugly trail of nothing torn through everything." Suddenly, Ellison was struggling to stand. Sandberg said, "Wait, easy," but didn't try to stop him, supporting him when the manacles and leg irons made it hard for him to get his balance. "They didn't take him back," Ellison said abruptly. "They don't want..." "Jackson's still here," he announced flatly. His eyes rolled up, and Jack found himself looking up as well, as though he expected to see Daniel floating in midair. "Sir," Sam said cautiously, Do you have any idea what...
Jack made an impatient, shushing gesture, hardly looking at her, until he realized that Tilk still wasn't on his feet.
Damn. Must be having some trouble bouncing back from two extractions in the course of a single afternoon.
Blair, help me, Ellison demanded. He was shuffling towards the front door, making awkward progress with his ankles hobbled, not doing much better when Sandberg put his arm around his waist to support him.
Please hang on a minute, the kid was objecting, even as he helped him. What are you doing? Where are you trying to go?
Ellison shook his head impatiently, pulling the front door open.
Carter, stay with Tilk, Jack called over his shoulder.
He caught up to Ellison and Sandberg on the landing. Ellison was starting up the stairs that probably went to the roof, while Sandberg fussed and protested every step of the way.
You think he's up there?
Jack asked. Ellison gave a tight, quick nod.
Then let me go first, Jack said, easing his way past them and taking the stairs three at a time.
Jim, wait, wait, Sandberg was saying. If he's there, Colonel O'Neill will find him. You need to...
He saved my life,
Ellison cut him off, his voice almost savage.
Help me.
Jack pushed open the door at the top of the stairwell and found himself on the roof. He'd lost track of the time, but it had to be near sunset or just past. The cloud cover was lowering and gray, a dark contrast to the twinkling lights in home and shop windows below. A dusting of snow had gathered in the leeward side of the HVAC unit and skylights, and a few random flakes were still drifting down from the sky. There was a wooden chair near the edge of the roof, overlooking the city.
Ought to get that in out of the weather, he thought vaguely.
He could hear Sandberg and Ellison clanking noisily up the stairs behind him, every step an effort. Ellison seemed pretty damn certain that Daniel was up here, and God knew, Jack wanted to believe him. But if he were here, why couldn't he see him? He had a horrible mental image of Daniel right beside him, helplessly trapped in another dimension, just out of phase. Never able to see or touch him, even though they were so close.
Danny, he whispered, half to himself. Throw me a line here. Something.
He turned slowly, blinking and trying to focus through the dusk, and suddenly found an upside-down face only inches from his own.
Jesus! He stumbled back half a step in shock. Daniel! Jesus!
Daniel's eyes were open but unseeing, his arms outflung, St. Peter crucified in the air. Jack reached out but was afraid to touch him. There was nothing to show how Daniel was suspended there, and no sign of the beings who had done this to him.
Daniel, he said again, pleading this time, his hands hovering inches from Daniel's face.
Daniel's eyes remained so vacant, Jack wasn't even sure if he were still alive. And there were lights he saw now, sparkling faintly across Daniel's brow and curving around the back of his skull.
A crown of thorns, Jack thought insanely, blasphemously, decorated with little Christmas tree lights.
Oh, God! Ellison and Sandberg had made it to the roof, and the Sandberg kid sounded just as freaked out as Jack felt. Not a whole lot of help there.
What are they doing to him? Jack demanded all the same.
Ellison had gotten them this far, after all.
How do we get him down?
Jim, you're barefoot, Sandberg protested, but didn't try to stop him as Ellison shuffled across to them. He looked up at Daniel, eyes wide and very dark in the gloom, and raised his shackled hands as high as he could.
"I can still feel them," he murmured, almost whispering. "But I don't know if they're here anymore."
"Blair, go get Carter up here," Jack ordered in desperation. "Maybe she'll have some idea what the hell this is. Hurry!"
The lights glittering around Daniel's head grew brighter, pink-tinged, and at the same time Jack realized that the lights were on the inside. Daniel's mouth opened, and he cried out. It was a senseless, agonized exhalation that lasted as long as the air in his lungs.
Then Daniel sobbed for breath and cried out again, and again. Jack couldn't stand it. Those fucking weird-ass sons of bitches were killing him, and there was nothing Jack could do.
"Daniel!"
he pleaded, and reached out to take Daniel's head in his hands. The instant Jack touched him, Daniel began to fall. It was just as well the Sandbird Kid had ignored his orders, because he was close enough to help Jack arrest Daniel's sudden plummet, grabbing Daniel's legs and wrapping his arms around them while Jack dove to protect his head, hearing both knees pop as he hit the roof. At that instant, he could have cared less. Better his knees than Daniel's poor, addled brains. Sandberg knelt awkwardly, lowering the weight of Daniel's body as gently as Jack supposed he could. Jack held Daniel's head in his lap, unable to do anything to stop the lights in Daniel's skull from suddenly flaring, fiendishly bright. Daniel's back arched hard, and his last scream was silent. Jaws prized open wide, the tendons in his neck standing out. Jack was afraid he was dying, and there was nothing he could do here in the wilderness, practically a day's travel even by plane from the nearest Goa'uld healing device on the planet. Then Daniel collapsed. The lights in his head vanished. Somewhere above him, Jack heard Ellison swear violently and a startled exclamation from Sandberg. He couldn't pay any attention to them now because even though Daniel's eyes were closed, Jack knew he was waking up. His head rolled and Jack told him to lie still, which was Daniel's cue, of course, to try to sit up.
"Don't move, damn it,"
Jack growled, his voice breaking. And Daniel's hand came up to grab the sleeve of Jack's dress uniform.
"They took it from me, Jack,"
he moaned, his voice hoarse from screaming.
"Oh, God, Jack, it's gone."
"Doesn't matter," Jack tried to reassure him, no idea what Daniel was talking about, and in the relief of hearing Daniel make whole sentences, not particularly caring either.
"You're going to be okay."
Daniel shook his head, yanking in frustration at Jack's sleeve.
"They didn't want the gold to have it, and I tried to explain that I wasn't... They wouldn't listen."
He released Jack's sleeve and pressed the heel of his good hand against his forehead, hiccuping a sob.
"I didn't even want it, but it was beautiful, and now it's gone. Ah, damn it."
He sounded like he was crying, although Jack couldn't see his tears in the dusk.
"I'm sorry. I'm sorry."
"Hey, come on. Easy," Jack whispered. They needed to get Daniel in out of this weather. He wondered if Tilk was well enough to come up here and give them a hand. "Don't worry about anything. Got it all under control here." Daniel scrubbed at his eyes.
"I'm so tired, Jack," Can't I just go home now?
His voice so soft, Jack had to strain to hear him, and when he'd made out what Daniel was saying, he had to swallow hard before he could answer. He caught Daniel's hand and held on carefully, curling over him to shield him from the drifting snow.
Sure you can, Danny, he told him, and was glad for the dusk himself.
Just waiting for you to decide it was time to go.
Had it really been only last night, Jim was thinking irritably to himself, that he had decided to let Sandberg's latest refugee stay here instead of immediately calling the FBI? And hadn't he done it just because he didn't want feds crawling all over his home? Simon was here, chomping on a cigar he wouldn't light, and for all of his grumbling, obviously having a hell of a time hobnobbing with Air Force officers. There were security forces from McCord stationed in the stairwell, all around the building and on the roof, and some hotshot team all the way from NORAD in Colorado Springs, with the identifying insignia removed from their uniforms, who seemed to be big pals of Jack O'Neill. They were expecting a liaison from the Pentagon to be here before morning, as well as Daniel Jackson's personal physician, whom Jim gathered was also flying out from Colorado. Someone had turned on the television. Jim strongly suspected O'Neill was the culprit. And Boris Karloff's voice was discussing a fiendish plot to steal the Whoville Christmas. The loft reeked of pepperoni grease and oregano from the dozen carry-out pizza boxes still stacked on the dining room table. Jim was a little hungry and thirsty himself, but he wasn't about to go downstairs. He flopped back on his bed and looked up at the ceiling, envying, though not begrudging, Jackson's snores from Blair's bedroom directly below. Probably the first sound sleep Jackson had enjoyed in 6 months. Had to be the only way he was sleeping through this commotion. He heard steps and knew Sandberg was on his way up. Jim closed his eyes, gathering his strength, but in the end, it really wasn't a difficult decision to make at all. "Hey, man," Blair said quietly. "You're not sleeping, are you?" "How damn likely is that with the party we've got going on downstairs?" he grumbled without opening his eyes. "I know." Blair actually chuckled a little. "Brought you something?" Jim peeled an eye open. "What?" "Soda crackers and a little chamomile tea, sweetened with honey. Thought it would feel good on your throat and help settle your stomach." Jim groaned theatrically, but he opened his eyes and sat up all the same. "This is Christmas dinner." "Sucks, I know." "There's some leftover rice that you can have tomorrow if you're still not feeling all jangly from the tear gas by then. It turned out pretty good." "Jangly, what, is that a medical term?" Sandberg was right as usual, though. Jim felt prickly and on edge in an indefinable way that could have been from the tear gas or any of the other outrageous things that had happened to him today. And although he wasn't having trouble breathing now, he couldn't entirely shake the fear that at any moment his lungs might still collapse like a set of worn-out bellows. He took the mug of lukewarm tea and had a careful sip. Too sweet, but it did feel good going down his throat. "Yeah," Sandberg breathed, reading him like a book, just like always. "That's it. Don't drink it too fast."
Not a difficult decision at all.
Did you hear? They found the vans those bogus ATF guys were hauling you and Daniel away in. No sign of the guys themselves, though, which is a little freaky. Where the hell could they go up in the mountains in the middle of a snowstorm?
Jim suspected he knew what had happened. Daniel probably did as well. Both of them had seen the man in the business suit walking up the shoulder of the highway just before Daniel had gotten them away.
A little freaky, Blair repeated. God, listen to me. What hasn't been freaky about today?
Want a cracker? He held out the plate for Jim, and when Jim shook his head, Blair took one himself and munched it thoughtfully.
How's Daniel doing? Can you tell?
Colonel O'Neill's still pretty worried about him, I think.
Jim shrugged. He's sleeping. I wish I could.
Blair bumped his elbow companionably against Jim's.
I know, man. I'm sorry. You want to see if maybe they let you go to a motel or something? At least till they finish up here?
It wouldn't help. They'd send guards with us and I wouldn't even be in my own bed. I wouldn't sleep any better there than I could here.
Yeah, I guess you're right. Just wasn't thinking.
Blair set the plate of crackers down on the floor. He bowed his head when he sat up again, hair swinging forward to hide his face.
I haven't been thinking about a lot of stuff, apparently.
Sandberg. No, man, let me go ahead and say this. I've pretty much been a complete idiot, haven't I? Just as naive as you always accuse me of being. This could have happened any time over the past 3.5 years, and I didn't even know. Even after Brackett, after Norman Oliver, I wanted to believe the government didn't know about you, or weren't really interested, even if they did know. And the only reason I had for thinking that, really, was that the alternative was just too fucking scary for me to deal with.
Well, that makes two of us, Sandberg. Even when the CIA started sniffing around, I wanted to believe I could just say no, and everyone would go away and leave me alone.
No excuse for that. He half expected Blair to berate him for never having mentioned the recruiters, but he only tucked his hair back behind one ear and looked at him earnestly.
So what are we going to do? Those Air Force guys aren't going to hang around forever, are they?
God, are they?
Yeah, well, I've been thinking about that.
How close are you to being finished, anyway? For real, Chief.
Blair didn't even pretend not to know what he was talking about.
Few weeks, maybe, if I sit down and really work my butt off. I've sort of been putting it off.
Jim had already figured that out for himself.
Then what happens? You show it to your advisor, you defend it to your committee, you rewrite the whole thing, and if you're really lucky, it gets published by an obscure academic press somewhere down the line, and nobody reads it but a handful of other sadly overeducated anthropologists with too much time on their hands. Well, them and the talent scouts at the NID.
Blair flinched, but then managed a tremulous smile.
More or less, yeah.
And that's the big book deal you were talking about?
The movie rights, where do those come in?
Excuse me? Blair's eyes got very round.
Movie rights?
You said it yourself. My story, your book. You said the movie rights could be worth millions.
Yeah, but that was just... Look, Jim, I was
just being really young and really stupid when I said that. You know, I would never... Now you're saying I'm too boring for anyone to want to make a movie about me? Dear man, did you get hit on the head today on top of everything else? Because you're not making a whole lot of sense right now. You're right. We need the best-selling book first. Actually, we need the pre-publication publicity first. How would we do that? A press conference? You think Naomi could help set up something like that? And now you're really starting to freak me out. I'm not trying to freak you out. I'm just trying to make the best of a bad situation. And frankly, Sandberg, it'd be a whole hell of a lot easier if you'd work with me here. I'm trying to, I swear, but I'm honestly not following you. You've made me promise to keep your abilities a secret for years. And now you want to publicize them? Secrets don't work anymore. They really never did, but you gave it your best shot, Chief. For me, I know you did. Blair couldn't meet Jim's eyes. It wasn't enough, he said at last. Maybe not, but that's not your fault. Listen to me, Sandberg. I'm convinced this is the right way to go here. Make a big, tacky media splash. Grab that 15 minutes of fame. Make sure that I'm too public a figure for the NID to ever consider tear-gassing me in a hotel room again. Blair gave a choked little laugh, reached fumblingly for Jim's hand, and squeezed it hard for a moment before letting Jim go. He looked away over the railing at all the people cluttering up his and Jim's tidy, safe home. "Are you sure you know what you're asking for?" he asked, still looking away. "Do you know what that kind of publicity would mean? You think this is an invasion of your privacy? This is peanuts compared to TV cameras, people looking into your life, calling your brother, your father. And who knows what kind of an impact it would have on your career with the PD, on your ability to do your job?" "Jim, man, I'm just not sure you've really thought this through." "Probably not," Jim reflected, watching the back of Sandberg's head. It didn't matter. He didn't even have to close his eyes to remember what he had heard the NID agents talking about while he shivered in chains in the back of their van. They'd been a little worried about his continuing reaction to the CS gas, and the special agent in charge had decided it would be safest to pick up Sandberg for a second opinion. They would have had Sandberg kidnapped off the street as casually as picking up a gallon of milk, and they would have ensured his cooperation with sodium pentothal and lysergic acid. And if they made another grab for Jim, they'd almost certainly take Blair as well. So, no, he probably wasn't prepared for the publicity or the rest of it, but he was fairly certain he'd manage just fine. He dropped a hand on Blair's shoulder and shook him gently, and when Blair looked back at him, eyes too bright, lips pressed together hard, but managing a smile of sorts for Jim all the same. Jim was decided. He was sure, after all. "Besides," he told Blair, smiling back, "just think how much it'll embarrass the old man down at the club to have a superhero in the family." It had taken him a while to build the fire in the fireplace one-handed, but he managed it at last, and frankly, it had been kind of nice to have something to keep him busy. He still felt at loose ends and suspected he was probably suffering a fair bit of culture shock. After all, it was still a surprise to sleep in the same bed two nights in a row. Downright startling to sleep in a comfortable bed at all. And definitely strange to simply lay himself down and close his eyes at the end of the day without worrying about what would happen to him as he slept. He rocked back on his heels, watching the bright flame licking its way through the kindling. He was trying not to think about the important questions too much, because the obvious answers were all pretty unpleasant, and he was resting right now. He'd earned that. Even Jack had told him so. The questions came creeping up on him all the same, though. How long was he going to wait around? Not even to find out whether he could return, but if he were even going to be allowed to grovel for his old job back in the first place. Did he even want it anymore? He'd been doing all right on his own. Lonely, desperate, terrified, bored out of his mind, right. There was all that. But now that he wouldn't be running anymore and could actually stop for a decent night's sleep, it might be nice to live unfettered by the demands of the military. Hammond had promised he could make that happen for him, if that's what Daniel wanted. Daniel still wasn't entirely sure if the offer weren't General Hammond's polite way of asking him not to come back at all. The click of the front door lock startled him, and he lost his balance, almost landing on his butt before he flung out his good hand to steady himself. "Whoa there, Danny," Jack said. "Didn't mean to scare you." "You didn't." Daniel got carefully to his feet. "Well, really, I guess I wasn't expecting to see you tonight." "Uh-oh," Jack said, making his way to the kitchen table and putting down a sack of groceries. "Hope I'm not barging in on a hot date or something." "Not exactly, no." He raised an eyebrow at Daniel. "So why wouldn't I be coming home tonight?" "Well, New Year's Eve, Jack. I figured you'd be out celebrating." "Nope. Tonight I've brought the celebration home." He produced a bottle from the bag with a flourish. "And nothing says Happy New Year's like cold duck." "Oh my God," Daniel said, laughing in spite of himself. "Why didn't you just buy grape soda?" Jack curled the bottle to himself protectively. "Hey, this was always Granddad's celebratory beverage of choice. Thought we could do worse than stick to tradition tonight." "Besides," he continued, turning to stow the bottle in the freezer, "you're not supposed to be boozing at all yet, so if you can manage more than a sip or two of this bubbly, then all I can say is, you're a stronger man than me." "Had dinner yet?" Yeah. I had a sandwich a few hours ago." "How many hours ago?" "I don't know. 3 or 4, something." 3 or 4 or something makes that lunch, Daniel." "Good thing. Tonight you're in for a real treat. Spaghetti a la O'Neill." Jack kissed his fingertips. "Fit for a king." "Honestly, Jack, you don't have to." "Don't have to what? Eat?" He was cheerfully pulling groceries out of the sack. Ground beef, Italian sausage, half a dozen garlic bulbs, green peppers, canned tomato sauce, and pasta. "Speak for yourself. I've been hard at work all day and I'm ready for some real food." "And yet you're making spaghetti," Daniel said, just like this was old times. Jack's head came up, and Daniel steeled himself for a patented O'Neill crushing comeback. But instead, The expression on Jack's face was so open and affectionate that Daniel had to look away.
"You betcha," Jack said quietly. "Janet's got me under orders to fatten you up a little. Which reminds me, new debriefing next week on P4X-347. Thought you might be interested."
The planet where they had found the light. Daniel made his way to the sofa and sat down heavily.
"Interested? Not really, no. I can make a suggestion, though. Keep the hell away from it."
"Well, yeah, that was going to be my idea, too. Hey, I got some celery in the fridge. You like celery in your spaghetti sauce? Sometimes I'm in the mood for it, sometimes I'm not."
"It's up to you, Jack."
"No celery, then. Actually, I'm almost never in the mood for it, now that I think about it. Wonder why I even buy the stuff. Anyway, a couple of us were thinking it might be helpful if you felt like coming in for the debriefing, too."
"Why? To be Exhibit A in a discussion about why that place is so fucking dangerous?"
Jack shrugged.
"Well, as Exhibit A's go, you have to admit you'd make a pretty damn good one. Really, though, it's Sam who's dying for you to show up. Turns out she had some pretty hot fantasies about non-Euclidean geometry while we were all coming down from the light, and she just can't wait to share."
Daniel didn't know whether to be amused or appalled.
"Sam did not say that."
"Maybe she did, maybe she didn't." Jack raised one eyebrow meaningfully.
"You won't know unless you come in and ask her yourself."
"Jack," Daniel sighed. "It's not that I don't appreciate everything. All of this, because I do. I'm just having a little trouble understanding why."
"Actually, she and Tilk are going to pop over a little later tonight, and you can ask her then if you can't stand the suspense. By the way, Janet wants to take another MRI to check out your addled wits. If you're going to be on the base anyway, she could do it after the briefing."
Daniel winced.
I'd rather have it done at the VA hospital. I'll give her a call and set up an appointment."
"Whatever works for you," Jack said, and Daniel supposed it was only his imagination that he seemed a little disappointed. Jack walked back to the bedroom, and when he returned a few minutes later, he changed into jeans and a black t-shirt so old it was almost gray, and most of the ribbing at the neckline had torn away.
"I always end up with tomato sauce all over myself when I make this," he said, getting down a skillet and setting it on the stove. He turned up the heat and then tore open the package of ground beef. When he dumped it into the skillet, it sizzled so violently, he jumped back to avoid getting spattered.
"I looked at some apartment ads today," Daniel ventured cautiously. Jack nodded without looking up. He seemed to be peeling the casing off the sausages.
"Local listings?" he asked casually.
"Yeah, well, yeah. I mean, for now, anyway. Someplace close so I can get out of your hair."
"You're welcome, as long as you need a place to stay, so don't worry about it."
The sausage went into the skillet along with the ground beef.
"I was the one who let your apartment go, after all. Figure I owe you one."
"Don't even joke about that," Daniel stared down, acutely uncomfortable.
You did it to save me money. It's the only reason I've still got an account balance at all, really. And I know how much trouble you went to, even though you were...
Hope you like lots of garlic in your spaghetti sauce, Jack interrupted. He'd broken apart one of the garlic bulbs in his fist and was smacking the individual cloves with the flat of a butcher knife to peel them.
Lots and lots of garlic is key to a good sauce.
Sam's told me how mad you were, Daniel pressed on stubbornly. And I guess I can't blame you. I just didn't have a choice. In retrospect, it all looks pretty dumb, I know. But all I could...
Daniel? Please.
Jack put down the knife and leaned forward, both hands flat on the counter.
There is no way you can explain to me why you thought it was a good idea to suddenly run away from home without a word to anybody. So it's probably better if you don't even try.
Daniel snapped his mouth shut and looked pointedly away through the patio doors. What else could he have expected? Jack wasn't finished, though.
What I do understand is that between Shifu and finding the Complete Idiot's Guide to Interdimensional Travel on P4X347, you were 100% convinced that you were the biggest threat to SGC since... I don't know, probably since Sokar burned his ugly mug through the iris. So you did the Daniel thing again.
The Daniel thing?
It'd be easier on the old ticker if you weren't always so quick to decide that the fate of the planet depended on you. But even I have to admit we've all done our share of world-saving the past few years. Some people, I guess it goes to their heads. So I'm trying to make allowances.
Allowances. For members of your team not as well-balanced as Jack O'Neill, you mean?
Jack spread his hands tolerantly, gave the browning meat a stir, and then started chopping the garlic.
If I decide to come back, you know they'll make me go through a psych eval.
I wouldn't be surprised, Jack said noncommittally.
With Mackenzie.
Distinct possibility there.
And you'd really be comfortable with his conclusions?
From the psychiatrist who had me drugged to the gills on neuroleptic meds, on the basis of a couple of visual and auditory hallucinations in the course of 24 hours, even though I was perfectly aware of their pathological nature, and then, once I was drooling on myself because I had so much thorazine in my system, he included affective flattening and alogia as criterion B symptoms of schizophrenia. That's the man you'd trust to decide I was fit for duty.
Jack waited him out patiently. It wasn't exactly the first time they'd had this discussion, Daniel thought belatedly. It had just been a while.
No, Jack said at last. I wouldn't particularly trust Mackenzie. I'd believe you, though, if you told me you thought you were ready to come back to work.
Daniel was so taken aback, he wasn't sure what to say.
I just don't know yet, Jack.
That's kind of what I thought. It's okay.
You'll figure it out.
Daniel suddenly felt a little like crying. For about the millionth time since he'd broken his fingers, he tried to cross his arms over his chest, and had to let his left arm drop to his side again in defeat. He was wondering if he could maybe convince Jack he was so tired he should really just go to bed now,
when Jack continued. Don't mean to be sticking my nose in here, but when Carter shows up, you might want to ask her if she'd mind driving you around to look at apartments next week. I'd be glad to go myself, but, you know, apartment hunting. That's kind of a girl thing. She'd probably be better company than me.
Okay, Daniel agreed quietly.
Besides, she'd like to spend the time with you. I think it was kind of hard on her, you being away for so long. She missed you.
Daniel looked up to find Jack watching him steadily and just a little too carefully. Daniel had a memory left of something very lovely and always just beyond his grasp. But Jack O'Neill was right here. He'd always been right here.
Tilk missed you too, Jack added thoughtfully, in that completely stoic, utterly unemotional, would never say or do anything to let you know, former first prime of Apophis kind of way.
But I could tell.
Right, Jack.
Daniel stared down at the floor, still a little closer to crying than laughing, but that was only because his heart was so full.
Maybe Tilk would like to come apartment hunting, too.
That's all, folks. Thank you for listening. If you've listened to all of this, you must have something to say about it. I'd love to hear it. And please don't forget to leave feedback for the author, Martha.
Thank you.